the crop.
Welcome to the 139th edition of the Gooner Podcast. This is your host, Kevin Witcher. Once again, stepping in for Mr. Mark Ollington, who is abroad and likely to be working on foreign soil even more soon. So start getting used to this. We are recording on the Thursday evening before the visit of Stoke, after the first of three international breaks this autumn. We are hosted once again by Piebury Corner, whose excellent food we have enjoyed this evening in the form of pie, mash and gravy. And our venue will explain the background ambience, which normally includes the sound of a police car siren about 50 minutes into the recording, as well as the background ordering of pies and the shop door slamming shut occasionally. However, we will be moving venue after this month, so bear with us those who prefer a slightly more tranquil setting. And now for introductions of tonight's panel. First up, a long-standing columnist in the Gooner, often veering way off the topic of football into Richard Littlejohn territory, not always to the liking of a section of our readership. But love him or hate him, you cannot ignore him. It's a warm welcome to the Highbury Spire, Mr. Steve Ashford.
Hi to everyone, hope you're all okay.
Next, a man we at the Gooner call our media whore, because of his willingness to step in and do the chores when TV and radio come calling. So if you see or hear someone claiming to represent the Gooner on your TV or radio, chances are it is him. A very good evening to Mr. David Udoh.
Evening, Gaffer, and thanks to all my fans for tuning in.
Last, but by no means least, an occasional but always welcome guest, a board member of the Arsenal Supporters Trust and an outspoken tweeter. A man with a number of reliable contacts who we hope may be able to shed some light on some of the inner workings at the club these days. It's delightful to say hello once again to Mr. Tim Payton.
Good evening.
Right, so we've had a few tweets with questions from our listeners, and I'm going to start with one which will lead into the subject of the moment, and it's from a Mr. Lancaster, and he asks, are we the fourth most ambitious team in London? West Ham and Spurs will soon have both new stadiums and projects. Arsenal are going round in circles, which does lead us on to the summer transfer window. Tim, do you have any idea what the hell went on at the club last summer, and were they actually trying to sign anybody?
There's the siren.
It's a bit early. It's a bit early. Were Arsenal trying to sign anybody?
Well, I think Gazeta's just opened the safe. The sirens have been turned on.
Right. What happened, Tim? Do you know?
Yeah, it was Arsenal. It was what happens in every transfer window. It shut with significant resources being left in the bank. There are a number of reasons for this. Most of them revolve around the control that the manager has over the direction that the club is in, a philosophy about spending money, indecisiveness, perhaps you could call it dithering in the transfer market, although others would call it a thoughtfulness. And it's just Groundhog Day of the same old issues. We were optimistic with the signing of Peter Cech. The window had started really well. We've got a really strong squad. We've added silverware each of the last two seasons. And a huge majority of observers felt that one or two more signings were going to strengthen us to being real title contenders. Now, we don't want to buy players for the sake of it, but it's so frustrating to see that the club has money to make the club stronger and it's not invested. But it's... Kev, it's really important to look at this about not one transfer window. You've got to look at the problem Arsenal have with transfer windows. The issue about having a striker goes back more than 2 years, and it actually goes back to the Higuain Suarez cock-up, when you could have had either of them, but by not getting either, they've compounded a problem. There aren't many of them out there. That window, there were a couple of them available. I still think the biggest blunder of the last 5 years was not going back with another £10 million to Liverpool for Suarez, which would have got him. And look what a transformation that would make. And ever since then, they've been scratching around. Because to be fair to them, there aren't many out there. And I'm not sure there was an obvious signing this window. But go back the transfer window last summer, what happened? Koscielny had done his Achilles. There was no centre-back brought in. There was no defensive midfielder found. The solution was actually only found through so many injuries that we were desperate enough to recall a player from Charlton who suddenly blossomed like no one could have predicted, including the manager. So the Arsenal Supporters Trust has said, hang on, what we've got to do is take a bit of a wider stock on this. All good clubs, review their management, review their governance. Let's take a look at what actually happens in transfer windows at Arsenal. Are the scouts not recommending good enough players to Arsene Wenger? Are the directors not quick enough or swift enough in approving funds to him? Or is he just taking too much of a view on caution towards the window? Who's doing the forward strategising about the value of players? Because it seems fairly obvious that players are getting more expensive as we go forward. More and more TV money, commercial money, gate money pumped into the clubs. It's got to go somewhere. It's being spent on players. But Arsenal are still holding on to the view that a player's worth what they were in 2009, not what they're going to be worth in 2017. So let's have a structural review. Let's actually look at all parts of the chain of making the transfer window work and see if we can correct what's happening. Because it's just not good enough to pay the highest prices in world football and sit here now on the 8th of September with 70 million in the bank and the likelihood that Joel Campbell or Matteo Flamini could play significant parts, or even if they play bit parts, the difference between being champions and coming third is often between 5 and 10 points. That can be the difference of who you have to carry in those positions. So I don't think, go back to your question, I don't think there's like one easy, it was that problem, but it's something that's got to be looked at in the round because the club is not performing well enough in the transfer market in strengthening its opportunities for its fans to really get behind the team.
Steve, would you say Arsenal are a club lacking ambition?
I certainly would. I certainly would after the last transfer window. I mean, all those resources, as Tim just said, 70 million is probably a conservative estimate of the money that we could spend. And we just didn't do a thing. I mean, when that guy said about, are we the fourth most ambitious club in London, West Ham spent 50 or 60 million. I know they're not starting from the same base as we are. They needed to improve their team. But you're not telling me that in all of world football, we couldn't have signed one player that would have been better than something we've already got. I mean, we lost Diaby after 6 years of doing nothing. 10 years of doing nothing, in fact. His wages, 60 grand a week. Why didn't we give them to Gökhan Inler, who's currently playing for Leicester? Wenger goes, I couldn't find anyone that would improve the team. Well, Leicester found someone. And who could say that Gökhan Inler wouldn't improve our team? Because anyone, especially a player of his quality, is better than nothing. Strikers, we've needed a striker for 3 years. It's all very well Wenger saying there isn't anyone out there, we want a world class striker. But if you can't get a world class striker, take the next best thing, take a very good striker. Leicester have got one. I'm sorry to keep going about Leicester, but they're showing all the ambition that we don't show. You're telling me that if Mourinho desperately needed a striker as much as we do, he would have sat on his transfer chest and not signed anyone. His scouts would have found someone and someone better than what he's already got. And this inertia that we've got, you know, in relation to the transfer market, it's just not good enough. I'm outraged, to be honest. So much so that the lack of ambition that we're showing, I've given my season ticket up. I ain't going next year after 45 years.
Okay. Although, in fairness, you did pay for it and you're selling it game by game.
Yeah.
A stronger statement would be not to renew it at all.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm living in hope that Jurgen Klopp or someone else comes in.
Yes, you don't want to give
and
it
then
up.
I can go back. But every Arsenal fan I know, and I'm sure you guys around here are the same, I would give anything to have Jurgen Klopp in charge of Arsenal on Saturday against Stoke.
Okay. David, I mean, amongst other suggestions would be that someone like Charlie Austin would have been worth a punt. Would you go along with that way of thinking?
Me personally, yeah, absolutely. Because the sheer fact of the matter is we don't have another centre forward in the role that Arsenal have in our 4-2-3-1. Sure, Walcott and maybe Campbell are alternatives, providing we play against a team who we think are going to attack us and therefore they're going to defend slightly high up the pitch, so we just play the ball over the top for one of the quick guys to run onto. But as Newcastle proved, as long as you defend on the edge of your own box, you know, there's no point in Walcott, there's nothing to do. The role of our lone centre forward is to play with his back to goal and hold the ball up and create people to get into the game. Giroud does that part of his game really, really quite well, better than most people. But Charlie Austin doing that role, that would work nicely. Would the transfer ever happen? God no. Wenger relies on his brilliant scouts, Danny Carbassioun, Jules Grimandi and other Arsenal failures. So Paul Fairclough as well, people like that who, with all due respect, they don't have other jobs in football because they don't know about football. He relies on them too much, and let's face it, Charlie Austin was rejected by the likes of Aston Villa and Newcastle, and Wenger having to take their sloppy leftovers. He's a very good manager in many different ways, but he's too proud, and I think it would be a pride thing to stop him going players like that.
Who was that French guy we signed a couple of years ago? The
which one?
Korean one.
Park
Chul-young.
South Korean.
Now, he's prepared to sign him. It was a complete waste of money, probably for about 10 million.
I think
he wouldn't have spent 15 million on Charlie Austin, who scored 15 goals in the Premier League in the last two seasons.
Park Chul-young was this century's Junichi Inamoto. It's the boost of shirt sales in Southeast Asia. But for our network of scouts not be able to find a 6'2" brick shithouse centre forward to play with his back to goal somewhere in Eastern Europe, where there are about 300 of them who are available for less than a billion, Arsenal's wanted budget, I mean, it's quite frustrating. And Tim, can you actually answer this question, which I've naturally heard an answer to, but how do transfers and player recruitment at our club actually work, in the sense that who has what? Is it ultimately controlled and signed off by Gazidis? What does Richard Law actually do? Has Wenger got the final sign off? What's the process?
Arsene Wenger totally has the final sign off. There's nothing moves at that club in the football side of things without him making all the decision making. The process is that there would be scouts watching players and reports and recommendations put up to Arsenal. I'm still told there's this kind of category on the forum about an Arsenal player, tick yes or no. Quite what that means, I don't know. It's partly, I think, is, you know, why it's a bit out of date. But so those reports go up to Arsene Wenger, who will then watch videos and make his own view and assessment. If he has decided that he wants a player, then that's when Dick Law and Ivan Gazidis are brought in to start talking to agents and start talking to players. But they will still have to work under a kind of tight approval from Arsene Wenger about what the amount of money that is paid is. But I think it's quite unusual. I think a lot of other clubs, the manager might, or the director of football, will say who they want, but the executives then worry much more about how much it costs and what's going on. But Arsene Wenger will be intimately involved and have a view about value and price. So then Ivan Gazidis and Dick Law will be sent to start negotiating and talking to the agents, but you still have a manager who, and this could be a strength, it could actually have saved us from some terrible strinings, but someone who's very, very thoughtful, or you could call it dithering, but someone who's changed his mind right the way up to the stages of players almost coming in for medicals. We can all, well, you,
like
you
know, Iguain,
well, Envia was a classic one, Iguain was another one, where they've got really, really close, and then the manager, you know, just decides that he's not going to do that, or sees something in training that changes his mind, perhaps has a particular loyalty towards, you know, players that have been on his staff for a while, and definitely has a distaste for money in football. Now, of course, it's ridiculous that a player like Marshall costs £38 million. So if you ask me, it's ridiculous if it cost £18 million.
I mean, all he does
is kick a bit of leather around. I mean, you can't start dealing with what a player is worth. They're worth what the market will pay and how much you need them. A lot of people will say they're, you know, £12 million for Peter Cech, who had 1 year left on his contract and he's 33, was too much money. But of course it wasn't for Arsenal, it was value, because Arsenal really needed a goalkeeper, a good, solid goalkeeper, and someone with title-winning credentials. So, but this notion of value, there's no such thing as value. How can Olivier Giroud be worth £140,000 a week? I mean, it's crazy, all he does is kick a football. Sure. It's just what the market creates. But that's how it works in the clubs. It really revolves around, I'd say, those three people, and if I put Steve Rowley as the chief scout as the fourth to put the system together, they are the key ones. The only involvement of the board would be to sign off big transfers, but that would be a rubber stamp to anything the manager wanted to do if it fell within the budgetary parameters that have been set.
So, Tim, a lot of Arsenal fans, just to put the record straight, a lot of Arsenal fans, they're against the club because Kroenke runs it, and they blame Kroenke for not letting Wenger have the money. All the AKBs, all you'll hear from them is it's not Wenger's fault, it's Kroenke, because he's keeping his eye on the purse strings. He wants the money in the bank, he won't let Wenger spend it. Before that, we heard that we're paying off the stadium, Wenger's not allowed to touch the money until we're paying off the stadium. There's always some excuse. Just to put the record straight, would Kroenke ever say to Wenger, you know, don't spend any money. I need it as collateral for my American interests.
No, not in the general sense. If Arsene Wenger said, I want Messi tomorrow, can I have £200 million? Klopp would say no. I can't afford it. So there you are. But as I think one of the directors came out with during the summer, I think actually said we could sign anyone but Messi and Ronaldo.
Yeah.
And well, that's broadly true. If Arsene Wenger had wanted to bid £70 million for Benzema, he could have bid £70 million for Benzema. The club, I absolutely believe they would have allowed him to have that money.
So this criticism of Kroenke is pretty unfounded then.
I think the criticism that money has been held back from Arsene Wenger, money that we can all identify in the accounts, is unfair. You might be able to criticise Kroenke and say he doesn't put enough pressure on Wenger to spend it.
Right.
And here you get, you know, there's always the mutuality, the convenience of... here of the club doing well, but it is not true to say that Arsene Wenger, and I think even the sort of I call them the fundamentalists, but even the fundamentalists now, they don't use the argument that Arsene Wenger doesn't have any money. They use the argument that there's no one to buy.
Right.
That's the default excuse of this summer. Not true. Morgan Schneiderlin went to Manchester United, a player that we scouted inordinately for 2 years, that we almost bought last summer, but the manager changed his mind because he felt he didn't play very well in the round of 16 World Cup match for France against Nigeria, then was available for this summer. I actually think £25 million for a 25 year old who plays for his country and at the record is not expensive in what's happening players in the Premier League now. To me, the mess up of this summer was that signing. Proven Premier League player, French, would have fitted in at Arsenal, either replaces or covers for Coquelin. You know, you could have let Flamini and Arteta or Riziki go, which would have meant your wages were covered without even it going up. On the striker position, I've got more sympathy. I do think the market is incredibly static out there, and you end up, in effect, having to take a punt on a youngster. And have United got it right or wrong? Although what's interesting there, lots of people criticising United. In football inflation terms, they've taken no more of a bigger punt than we took on Theo Walcott. We spent 15 million on a 16-year-old and put him on 60k a week, who hadn't played for his country and was very, very young. United have kind of taken a similar type of risk, although this player is 19, and I think arguably a little bit more developed and a little bit more proven than Theo than there. But in terms of football inflation, it's about the same kind of deal. And that's one of the things that we've stopped doing, the big investment in the younger talent, as well as dried up a little bit. But let's get this absolutely straight. Arsene Wenger had big money to spend this transfer window.
So it's my stance has always been Gazidis and Dick Law, who I still don't think actually exists.
I've met him, I can promise you that.
Thank God for that. But look, I always had it in my head that they just couldn't negotiate properly. But are you essentially saying that I'm a little bit wrong, and that ultimately it's Wenger signing off because he owns and asks so much?
Because Wenger doesn't give many players to sign.
I can't prove it, but I believe that Ivan Gazidis would have gone back to Liverpool with £50 million for Suarez the day after the £40 million bid failing, but the Arsene Wenger decided that that was as far as he was going to go in that instance.
I mean, Wenger goes on about there's no players available at value. Well, let me give you one player, and I'm only a mere punter. Every time I've watched Marseille play, and that includes games against Arsenal, André Ayew has looked outstanding. He's only young, 25, comes to the end of his contract, went to Swansea on a free, speaks English. He's taken the Premier League by storm. I know it's only four games, but I think we know how good he is for Ghana and for Marseille. Where was Wenger when he was going on a free? He would have been ideal for us. So that argument that there's no players out there, I'm sorry, Mr. Wenger, but that isn't the case. And I was prepared to give Wenger the benefit of the doubt this year when he signed Czech. And we won the FA Cup twice, did really well at the end of last season. You know, I was thinking, right, you know, you've changed. You've got the new fitness coach in there from Germany. You know, apparently there's fitness issues that are being improved. And then he reverts to type and just lets us all down yet again.
Well, let's move on to the fitness thing, because we have got a tweet about that. And it's a junky one, but it does lead on to the topic. It's from a certain David Udo. who tweeted
in. Oh, this is from my friend Matt Delaroche, a Sheffield Wednesday fan of all people.
He asked...
No, it's not, it's from you. You're just admitting that guy.
You're asking yourself questions now.
It's when I answer back. That's when the psychologists get involved.
Anyway, David's friend asked if our medical team are Spurs fans. Now, obviously, we've got the injury thing. There's also the delicious idea that the bookies reducing the odds on Eva Canero moving to Arsenal from Chelsea. Has the old injury dilemma actually gone away, or do we think it's never changed?
Well, Kev, you've got me on to my next point, strangely. Today, at Arsene Wenger's press conference, he was asked about Jack Wilshere. 2 weeks ago, he said, oh, he's back after the international break. You know, no problem, he's making good progress, hairline fracture, doesn't need an operation, he's back after the international break. Today he was asked, there's been a setback. We don't have a date for Jack Wilshere's return. So, deja vu with a million other players or what? We had the same with Welbeck. Welbeck's back after the international break, when he could have signed someone to replace him. Now he's out till Christmas. Hodgson reckons he's out till March. I mean, what is going on with this fitness? I mean, Jack Wilshere, are we ever going to see him again? I mean, it's outrageous. It really is.
Something about the fitness I want to know about. One of our big signings last summer was Shad Forsyth. £1.8 million a year, I understand his salary is. And in fairness, the way he makes people run around for about 30, 45 seconds after 22 minutes of the first half, it is first class. We do look the same as Stoke City in that respect. But what the fuck does he actually do, this big money signing?
There seems to be a penchant at the moment, and Arteta was the same last year. Someone gets an injury, they watch them for six weeks, 2 months, 3 months, whatever, and then they decide they need an operation. Yeah, with Arteta it's out, with Welbeck and now it's out with Wilshere. Why doesn't someone give him the operation after 2 weeks? I mean, you tell me.
Do you think other clubs experience the same, that because we're Arsenal fans, we only...
We've not actually got an injury crisis at the moment. We've got a very fit squad. We've only got two players out. We start, you know, and actually they really improved things towards the end of last season. Because we think 95% of the time about Arsenal, we don't notice what's going on at other teams and other clubs, and you know, the injury record is quite good. There is a problem that Jack Wilshere has a style of play and a physique that I think he's always going to be injured, and it's quite tough because you live in hope that there's a great footballer in there, that if he could get fit, maybe if you were ruthless you'd clear him out, because there comes a point where you have to wonder. It's perennial with some of these players, but Arsenal's injury record is good. And where I think there's been some unfair criticism of Arsene Wenger was around Welbeck. Arsenal were absolutely right to cover up the Welbeck injury until the transfer window, because they would have been in the market for another striker, and you don't tell everyone you've got that problem. So I'll praise them there. Where I'll criticise them is they didn't do the signing to bring the striker in to cover the injury that they knew that Welbeck had. But you can't expect them to come out and tell the world on the 29th of August but Welbeck is injured, because every club would go, oh, QPR, you want Charlie Austin, and then we'll have 25 million, please. What they should have done, if Welbeck was injured, was offered, you know, I'd have offered QPR 10 million plus 5 million if he gets 10 goals.
What about 10 million like Joe Campbell? They'd have taken that.
They probably would.
Yeah.
And people say, oh, he's not worth that. Well, I would probably agree that Charlie Austin isn't worth that, but this is where you're defining worth in football is almost impossible. If Welbeck is injured till January, I suddenly think that someone like that does become worth it or needs to be signed.
It's the nature of it. It's like if you go into Argos on Christmas Eve at 23:50 and the only thing left is a manky Elizabeth Duke necklace at Argos, whether you like it or not, that's what your wife's getting for Christmas.
Umbrellas cost more on the market when it starts raining.
Exactly.
We signed that necklace, Chris Kallstrom.
Oh, okay.
Deadline day 2 years ago.
I tell you what, as a media whore, I was interviewed by Viasat TV from Sweden on Sunday, and they mentioned, so David, Swedish Arsenal legends, there is Freddie, there was Remy Sharban, there was Sebastian Larsson. I went, yeah, Kim Kallstrom, and the guy ignored me, a Swedish guy ignored me, mentioning
Kim
Kallstrom.
In the case of the Kim Kallstrom necklace, it was broken, and he still signed it.
Yeah, we didn't pay his wages, so there.
Okay.
In a way, you've got to love them, haven't you? Where would we be without the Arsenal that we know and love?
Yeah.
We can rely on them.
Yeah, well,
we're very consistent.
We'd be happy otherwise.
We've had 4 Premier League matches this season. We've had 7 points out of 12. Simon Rose, who is a contributor to the Gooner, and has tweeted 3 questions. The first one is, Can we seriously challenge for the Premier League and Champions League having not boosted the squad beyond check? We need to stop moping, he says. Well, okay, let's rephrase that. Are you optimistic that Arsenal can improve on last season in terms of Premier League and Champions League, given they've only signed Peter Cech?
Not really, no, because Ospina made a lot of good saves last season. And between Christmas and May, we had the best defensive record in the Premier League anyway. So if we already had the best defensive record, signing a keeper is not going to improve it to the extent that only a keeper will turn us into Champions League contenders and Premier League contenders. Everyone knows that we needed a striker, probably a defensive midfielder, and I would say also a winger to compete with City and Real Madrid and Barcelona. The squad itself is okay, but I can't for the life of me see how we're going to compete this year. The team that we're watching this year lost 3-1 at home to Monaco. 2-1 at home to Monaco, but it was enough to go out. Or was it 3-1? It was 3-1. It was enough to go out. How is that team suddenly going to improve this year with just checking goal?
Well, Tim, here's a question for you. Given that the Champions League seedings have changed, let's say Arsenal finish second in their group, is there a chance that they could get a draw which would be kind against a group winner?
It could be. It's mixed things up a bit because some of the stronger teams are now in effect in the second seeding position. So it does mean that coming... I still think if you can win the group, the balance of possibility gives you a more likely easier draw, but it's not so clear-cut as that. And it's something to look at. And I do think that I think it's most likely, actually, that, you know, to look at taking a third FA Cup. Arsenal got a really strong squad. I'd probably praise it more than that. That's why I'm so frustrated by the transfer window, because I think Arsenal are the only team that can challenge City this year. I think others have got different issues going on, but Arsenal probably have handicapped themselves too much with the transfer window to keep up with City. The only chance of keeping up with City is if they lose Aguero for a sustained period. Other than that, couldn't believe it when they were 3-1 at the start of the season. Everyone was almost forgetting about them. They made good signings on top of a squad that let itself down a little bit last year, I think, has been put together. But I still think, at the moment, I can see Arsenal coming second, but perhaps with less points than they came third last year. Because what we're also seeing in the Premier League is a definite strengthening of the Stokes, the Palaces, the Swanseas, yeah. Southampton. And we've already seen it, and I think it will carry on. They will take points off Arsenal, Chelsea, United, and maybe even City.
Isn't that a terrible indictment on Arsene Wenger, though, that all of these teams can manage to strengthen, albeit it's probably relative to their position and their financial
power. It's a bit easier, I think, because, you know, to take the sort of £10 million, £12 million player, You mentioned Andrew Ayew, who was a good signing, but who'd have thought Swansea would be nicking on a Bosman, one of the best players out of Marseille, or the Crystal Palace would take Kabaye out of PSG, and some of the deals that are going on, or Inter would go to Leicester.
Exactly.
So there's some real strengthening going on.
Well, this is basically an indictment on Arsene Wenger, surely.
Yeah. Okay, well, I've got a tweet which I'm going to address to David. It's from Nicky Price, and he asked, why have the team started so slowly this season after a great finish to last season? All the same players, but with a better goalkeeper.
Well, obviously with all the same players, therefore you can just watch the videos of the last seven games from last season, know the team that's turning out, how to play them. West Ham did that. Okay, I mean, the first goal was an unfortunate nightmare from Cech, as was the second, I suppose, but we didn't have a chance of going through them at all. From those, you know, it's that thing. I mean, at the end of last season, Man City were only, several points above us, and they went out and bought six players. Wenger thought, you know what, no, we'll be okay as we are. We didn't spend anything. Everyone knows who they're playing. Therefore, they can set up quite easy against us. So even though we haven't necessarily strengthened as far as he's concerned, there's no alternative diversity which we've had this time last season. So in short, teams already know how to play us. Do the right thing, defend as deep as you want to, job's done. I mean, Newcastle were terrible, and they were down to 10 men, and we scored with a deflected own goal. Epic fail on our part.
But at the end of last season as well, let's hark back to last season if we have to. The last five home games, we only scored in one of them. And that's carried on into this season. So there's a pattern there that we can't score at home against packed defences. And Wenger didn't realise that in the summer. He certainly realised after West Ham and Liverpool. And if we don't score against Stoke this weekend, I reckon there'll be riots at the Emirates.
Well, we live in hope. But anyway, I'll now go to a tweet related to this, perhaps, from Joe Gagliardi. And he says, 4-4-2 formation, please discuss. Tim, Arsenal are a bit predictable from the sound of things. Do you think it's time we started experimenting a bit?
I don't think I'd move to the 4-4-2. I just think in the modern game, particularly in the big games against the best clubs, Champions League and Premier League, you get too exposed in your midfield, you get run over. And particularly the type of midfield we've got, we've not exactly got, you know, the personnel to allow, in effect, one spare up front, because you've got a really solid couple of DMs sitting in there to do all the work. But I do think that thinking about the approach we take, it seems that either Walcott or Giroud play at the moment, and that is, you know, costing us the whip, because Theo is either being played up front or not getting in, and Ramsey is pushed out on the right, and there just isn't enough width or pace in this Arsenal team at the moment. And he's kind of struggling. It's because where does he put Aaron Ramsey? And he's giving Ozil the free roll in the middle, which sometimes works but sometimes doesn't. And for me, I'd move Ozil back to the left, create the space. I mean, world class players can make that work, and he should. And I still, you know, people say, when I criticise and challenge Ozil, people sort of say, oh, it's outrageous, and why are you being unfair on him? And then Arsene Wenger comes out and says he wants to see more from him. He wants to see more goals, and he wants to see improved performances, and him stamp his mark and kind of earn a Player of the Year title. And I agree with Arsene Wenger. Ozil has not really delivered enough for Arsenal yet, and getting the maximum out of him. Some games he's carried, and I would push him to the left, where I still think he can make his really positive creative contribution, but that would let Ramsey move in and then free us to have more width on the right at the moment. So I do think some tactical change, but not for me, 4-4-2.
Why has he stopped playing Wenger, Walcott on the wing? He hasn't played Walcott on the wing
because
he's come back from his injury.
Because then he loses the space for Ramsey.
Yeah. Ramsey's not a winger anyway, I don't think. Ramsey should always play in
the thing field. Is, you're not playing a winger in the 4-2-3-1. And in fairness, if you look back at the Invincibles, even the 98 team, even though as far as we're concerned they were 4-4-2, they were 4-2-3-1s, I think. I mean, you look at the Invincibles, the two, Coquelin essentially was Gilberto Silva, Vieira is Cazorla, Ramsey, whoever plays in that position. Of the attacking three, the one in the middle was Bergkamp, the left and right, Pires and Lundberg. But I mean, let's face it, now it's Ozil in the middle, Sanchez on one side, Cazorla or Ramsey on the other, and then the lone centre forward, Julien Henry. Having said that, Henry for me is the greatest centre forward this club has ever had or will ever have, and a unique player in his own right. Giroud's got a very slightly different role, but I suppose from a certain point of view, rather than having Henry as the starting centre forward, we had Kanu.
Weren't we lucky in those days?
Now we know. David, I mean, the idea of playing Ozil on the left would mean something has to be done with Alexis Sanchez. It has been suggested he might be worth a go as a centre forward. He did play there a little bit in the early stages of last season, from memory. Do you think it's worth returning to that?
Me personally, no. I think Ozil is our most gifted player personally, and I think persevering with him as a number 10 for an entire, well, at least for half a season, so we can get what he wants and we can hope we get the best out of him. I mean, Christ, why not try it? You know, because he hasn't quite worked on either side. Sanchez last year, when he was absolutely brilliant, was that portion of the season where he played on the left. Unfortunately, the guy's completely and utterly knackered. If anything, we'd be 10 points clear already, and we can send him to fuck off to a beach for 2 months, where he likes it or not, and then he'll come back and be completely fit. But he's a great player, but he's very, very unfit at the moment. But personally, I persevere with Sanchez on the left, and have Ozil as number 10.
Tim, I mean, I know it sounds a bit weird, but do you ever think there's anything in a contract whereby a player has to start if he wants to?
No.
Right, because sometimes I get that idea about Alexis.
No. There absolutely isn't anything in contracts about that. But there are relationships between managers and players, and, you know, deals and a sense of what will work well for the player. I was a huge critic of Alexis Sanchez playing so quickly for us. I think it is crazy. The guy was running on fumes at the end of last season. He will get injured. But that said, you know, he popped up with the goal that mattered at Palace and got us going with a kind of determination to get to the ball that led to the goal that not a lot of them give. And so I can understand why the manager throws him in, but actually across the games that he's had for us, he's not looked that sharp. And I think that the injury will come, or the just lack of form will come, and it's a little bit of desperation. I think the manager went against his own belief of what was right in putting him back in. And if the manager states that a pre-season is really, really important and puts a lot of stress on it, and then he's playing Sanchez, who only has 8 days at Arsenal, so which is it, Arsene Wenger? Do you believe in a proper pre-season for a player, or do you believe in throwing them in? And this slightly, you know, it's become slightly mythical about Sanchez being, you know, the ever harder worker. And I think, you know, him or his agent play up to it a little bit by posting videos of him running up hills, which I think any player could do that if they want. I think it's become a little bit of a brand image, although undoubtedly he does put a shift in when he's on the pitch. But it just adds to my unease about what's going on at the moment.
Okay. Well, there's another thing about these players as well. If Wenger isn't going to sign anyone, play the kids. Put a few of those brilliant youngsters we've got in. I mean, Iwobi and Adelaide did a really good job in the Emirates Cup. We probably won't see them again until Christmas. Other clubs, United, for instance, they've signed that Marshall. He's only a year older than Adelaide, and they paid $36 million for him. So why don't Wenger just put Adelaide in and say, he's better than Marshall, I'll prove it. He won't, because I think he's lost all his ambition and his creativity.
Okay. A quick one-word answer on this one, I think, because it's all it needs. It's another Simon Rose question. He asked simply, Mertesacker or Gabriel? David, your votes.
Mertesacker.
Tim?
I'm very happy. It's a very good cover to have. I know that's not one word, just Mertesacker, but I think by the end of the season it will be Gabriel.
Steve?
Oh, I agree with Tim. I love Mertesacker. I love the BFG. He symbolises everything that's good about the club. But I think Gabriel is a brilliant player. So,
who would you pick?
Gabriel.
Okay.
Oh, dreams can come true.
Right.
Brilliant joke.
So, I mean, I'll do Simon's other question. Get it done and dusted. Can we retain the FA Cup if we avoid Chelsea and City again? Are they still the only teams definitely better than us? Optimistic about the Cup, Mr. Rudolph?
I think it depends on the draw. We had a more difficult draw last season than we did the year before. But I'm not saying the FA Cup draw is rigged or anything like that, but I wouldn't be surprised if we got Chelsea away in the third round this year, or Manchester City away. I don't think we will, but if our draw is York City versus AFC, Rushden and Diamonds, or by Kettering Town, etc., then yeah. But putting a gun to my head, no, not this year.
I mean, just a historical question.
I don't think the draw matters. I think the team that Arsene Wenger sends out is what matters. If you send out that first team, of course we can win the FA Cup again. It's a double-edged sword. I'd love us to do three in a row. I think there's something really quite magical about that. But if we're sending out strong FA Cup sides in January, February and March, kind of means, because deep down he knows that the league's over, yeah, and he's comfortable before. So Bill and me would quite like to think that fairly weak teams are going to play in the FA Cup, because the Champions League is still live and we've still got a chance of winning the Premier League. My suspicion is that City will be clear of us and we'll play relatively strong FA Cup sides. And at the moment, I would put my money on a third FA Cup win, because I think the team's got a lot of talent, but not enough talent for Champions League or Premier League. And so when it wants to win the FA Cup, it can.
I'm guessing the last time three in a row was done was probably in the 1800s.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever done. That would be my answer.
Something like old Etonians probably did it.
My answer would be the law of averages says,
yes,
in 100 odd years of the FA Cup, 130 years in the FA Cup, no team's ever won it three times on the trot. Only a few teams have won it twice on the trot.
Wenger himself has won it more than all but four clubs, hasn't he, or something?
You're right. Yeah.
I've got a hunch this year we'll lose at home to Blackburn or someone, like we usually do before we went on this run.
He's won 50. No, he needs one more to have won more than 50% of Arsenal's FA Cups.
Right. I mean, knowing us, we'll probably go and win at Man City and Chelsea, and then we'll, you know, come the fifth round or whatever.
It'll be Bradford away again.
Blackburn or Bradford at home, yeah, and we'll lose.
Well, I mean, we've got a really interesting decision about cup teams to make very soon, because no one wants to go at that place and lose, but that comes in a run of really tough games.
Exactly. I suspect we will see the bench and a couple of youngsters. But it was interesting, they gave away a set of postcards with a Liverpool programme which had Arsenal's 12 FA Cups. And in a way, it's strange that we now almost take it for granted on one level, the success.
Do you know what, Kev? I think they do take it for granted. Because why don't they bring the FA Cup round for the first home game?
We as fans also,
but the club
are guilty.
I mean, as far as I'm aware, only about 15,000-20,000 Arsenal fans actually went to Wembley and saw the FA Cup. So for the fans that couldn't make it, the first home game of the season, what is wrong with bringing the FA Cup out and parading it round the Emirates?
Yes.
To me, that smacks of arrogance not doing that.
Well, they would say they did the parade.
Or again, a lack of creativity.
It's a lack of imagination.
They had the parade, didn't they?
Yeah, but the parade Sunday
morning. I think there's a danger of bringing it out now when you want the focus to be on this year, not last year. I think what's interesting is, I think because of our failure at competing for the title and going far in the Champions League, that the FA Cup has become bigger for us. I mean, if you go back to 06, 07, 08, exactly, when some really weak teams were being played, and we shrugged, actually, because we were doing well in, you know, we'd had a Champions League final, we'd had the Invincibles, we'd had that team, and we'd become a bit sniffy about the FA Cup.
We didn't do a parade in 2005.
We didn't do a parade because it had become to the stage where it wasn't worthy of doing a parade. And it's become very big again, and actually the FA Cup saved Arsene Wenger's job.
Absolutely. Much as some would say, they would probably swap the two FA Cups and have Jurgen Klopp as manager.
Okay, so a tweet from Jonathan Houseman, who used to sell the Goon.
Any relation to Peter?
No, it's spelled very differently. He asks, if we finish 10th, would the Wenger fundamentalists still say he deserves more time?
Yes.
Now, do we seriously think there is any chance of the stadium rebelling if things don't?
If Arsenal came 10th, which they won't, partly because with the resources they've got, it's almost impossible now, the correlation you have, look at the strength of the squad and the size of the wage. But if Arsenal came 10th, it would be in meltdown everywhere, but actually Arsene Wenger would remove himself before being removed, I believe.
Right. If Arsenal finished 6th?
Yes.
I think the only caveat on that, if you finish,
Chelsea finished outside of Champions League place, but then they won it, you know, and you could say it was partly because they were winning it that the fall off happened in the other area. So you could get a bizarre scenario like Arsenal win a Champions League and come 6th, and you'd be delighted if that kind of distraction had occurred. But if we sort of slump to 10th, which I think that's not going to happen, but if it did, then Arsene Wenger wouldn't carry on as manager.
Okay. Oh, let's hope we finish 10th then.
No.
I think if he goes, it'd be of his own choice. The last two times, the last three times actually, I've seen Ivan Gazidis speak over at the club. He uses the expression supply and demand scarily too often, as far as I'm concerned. So as long as Arsenal as a football club is selling 60,000 tickets every fortnight for 26 to 28 games a season and making £3.5 to £4 million every game, essentially that the job is done. I mean, yeah, sure, you get all kinds of television prize money for finishing in the top four, which is the holy grail now, and that'll be a huge blow. But ultimately, as long as we sell our 60,000 tickets and making that money, then that's a
key. Can you see the fans revolting though?
Arsenal fans or the people who go to the
ground? Arsenal fans.
People who go to the ground.
People who go to the ground. I don't know about you, but I mean, even though I've got season ticket holders around me, I've been trying to change my season ticket to a few rows in front of me for the last 2 years, but can't be moved because people are renewing their season ticket. Those season tickets are being sold by students and tourists from all around the world. I'm not on that against them at all. Of course not. I mean, I go abroad to see sport all the time. But I mean, as long as they sell the 60,000 tickets, people in the ground will never rebel because, you know, they get to take their 300 selfies for their Facebook page, which they'll never look at the right place and check in at the right place. And ultimately, that's the point.
There's lots of booze where we don't win.
Well, it's a bit pantomime, but it needs a bit of a chant, because that gets more media coverage, you know. So, for example, they used to announce the attendance, but that became a trigger at an end-of-season game for the board to be criticised by a chant. You know, I can't remember what it was, but it was the Villa game, we lost 2-0, and the fans were...
I think it was 6% you're having a laugh.
Yes,
wasn't it?
Because of the price rise.
Yeah. Also, they read out an attendance that was probably 59,500, and it was clear there were only about 45,000 in the stadium.
Is there a case, Tim, given that they raised the season ticket prices, or all ticket prices, by 3% two summers ago, for the club to actually give some of that money back, because they haven't spent
it. There has to be. I mean, what if the point of a football club is to benefit its supporters, why sit on a cash pile that grows larger every year and is disproportionately large compared to all the other Premier League clubs? Shouldn't the funds either be invested in the team or used to benefit the supporters that provided those funds by lowering ticket prices or other initiatives? Couldn't agree more.
Don't
sit on huge cash piles. Either invest it in a stronger team for the fans to enjoy, or have some kind of give back to the supporters. I also think with all the money coming in, at the very least, tickets should be frozen for the next 3 years. The general admission price should be frozen for the period of this TV contract.
I will bet you all. I will bet you all £100 now, with this audience, as witnesses. I bet each of you £100 the club will put the ticket prices up at the end of this year. They've frozen it for 2 years. They've done us a huge
favour. 1 year.
Over. Well, it'll be 2 years at the time, though, won't it?
You said at the start of that. That speech there, Tim, that most football clubs, you know, don't want to sit on a pile of cash, they want to improve the team. Now, a lot of people would say on the internet and Twitter and what have you, that Arsenal isn't a football club, Arsenal is a bank. They just stockpile money and they're not interested in winning trophies or, you know...
Well, they won a trophy in May.
Yeah, but they're not interested in winning the trophies, yeah. The Premier League and the Champions League.
Not interested, I would disagree with that. I mean, of course they want to win them. Are they interested enough? Are they aggressively ambitious enough?
As we all said earlier, why isn't pressure put on Wenger to be more ambitious?
Because he achieves enough for them.
Yeah.
I think the board, Stan Kroenke, Arsene Wenger, I think it would all like to win the Premier League. Apart from anything else, it would make more money. Which is what they're there now for. But I think the problem is that if you come in the top four, you make enough money that you don't get terribly upset about it. And I like the attitude that, you know, fourth place is for losers. It's nothing to celebrate. I don't like this celebration of it. I understand what it gives you for the following season, but my attitude is, yeah, you came third. Okay, what are you going to do? That means two teams are better than you. What are you going to go and do this summer to be better than those two other teams?
Yeah.
You know, leave no stone unturned. And that was a sort of David Dean motto. His anecdote was shaving every morning, looking in the mirror. How do I get a better team?
Yeah.
You should. And I just don't think that Arsenal's absolutely have that aggressive 100% ambition to improve. I think they want to win, but I think they're too satisfied.
David Dean was still there
place,
now,
that we would not have had the summer we've had.
If David Dean was still there, would he look in the mirror and think, I want Arsenal to be the best, I want Arsenal to improve? If that means getting rid of Arsene Wenger, would he make that decision?
No, what David Dean would do, I believe, I've seen David fairly recently, is David Dean would be much more pushy, cajoling, supportive of Arsene Wenger to spend the money.
Mm.
Whereas the current board is very hands-off. It's you, Arsene, you decide, you run the club. Whereas I think David Dean would be frustrated as hell, thinking, why is there £70 million in my club's bank account when I could have two more players? What about this player, Arsene? What about that player? Come on. No, we can afford him. Let's have him. It's him or him. I'm going to buy him tomorrow. Arsene, so you choose. I'm going to get him or him.
Yeah.
You make the final call.
Well,
I really think
bought Sol Campbell against Wenger's will, wasn't it?
I don't know that so much about his, against his will, or rather he made it happen. And another one was Sylvain Wiltord, where
it was Arsene
would have, was the record signing, but Arsene would have given up on the signing, but Dean just wouldn't take no and just turned up with him one day.
So that means that, so that's because that isn't happening, there is obviously something fundamentally wrong with the club.
There is partly because when David Dean went, the club said to Arsene Wenger, you can have complete control of football matters, and they handed it over to him, and there's no one kind of for him to report to. Remember that Arsene Wenger approved Ivan Gazidis being appointed as his boss. You know, Ivan Gazidis cannot really walk into Arsene Wenger's office and lay it on the line.
No. So quick question. I know it's probably Kev should be asking this, but I'll...
No, go on for it. It's like we're in a pub.
would you think Arsenal would be better off if we had another manager?
Not at this moment in time. I don't want to get into that debate because I think that it's only September. I think I'd get behind the manager and get behind the team that we've got now. But what I would not be doing would be thinking about giving him another contract at the moment.
Okay.
But I would get behind him now and say, because he's...
you know, the board aren't going to move him on. Good big clubs don't move their managers on mid-season. I would be putting pressure on him about the January transfer window, and I would be thinking very hard about changing the manager at the end of this contract period, but I wouldn't call for him to go now. I don't think that's right or sensible, no.
Okay.
We've got two more tweets, so I'll just cover them both briefly. Firstly, I think we sort of have really covered this, but anyway, Mark King asked, with financial fair play dead, if we maintain our current model, can we ever compete with the big three in the Premier League money-wise, or do we need to change?
Let me have a quick go at that. First of all, it's so frustrating because the AST has been saying to Ivan Gazidis and the board for years, why are you focusing so much on FFP? It's both wrong as a policy and it's impractical. It's not going to work or be implemented. You're putting all your eggs in this basket. It's the wrong strategic direction for the football club to take. And Ivan Gazidis spent all his time trying to cajole other Premier League clubs to bring in an FFP and campaigning it for it with UEFA. You don't hear him talking about it too much now, probably because it's gone wrong. It makes it tougher. Yeah, it makes it a lot more tough for Everton and Aston Villa than it does for Arsenal. So shouldn't be too worried about Arsenal. We have huge revenues compared to most Premier League clubs. But it's a bit of a false debate to talk about FFP when you've got £70 million in the bank.
Absolutely.
It really is a false debate. If we were spending every single penny and then watching Manchester City and Chelsea burn away from us, I could start to understand the debate. But for God's sake, moaning about other clubs spending money when you've got yours locked in the bank, for fuck's sake, give me a rest. Let's just get on and spend what we've got and
Absolutely.
Do it properly and then worry Absolutely. About other clubs Absolutely. And other people's policies.
Absolutely.
David, does the Atletico Madrid model give us hope?
Under
a different manager,
well,
yes.
Hope, yeah. I mean, yeah, fantastical hope. Yeah, sure. Realistically, no. I mean, the Arsenal we've got at the moment, I think we've got it for the foreseeable. I mean, personally, I felt in the summer when FFB was knocked to one side, we should become pro-Usmanov rather than pro-Kroenke. I mean, if you look at Kroenke's other sporting entities, one of the reasons he's involved with Arsenal is he's trying to move his St. Louis Rams to Los Angeles and has bought a bunch of land in Los Angeles to move their stadium there. But, you know, that mortgage has got to be paid. And the St. Louis Rams, I mean, do any of them, any of you actually know who they are? They are the American football equivalent of Stoke or Aston Villa. Won't win anything. They'll be about 10th every year. You know, I mean, I think they actually changed the NFL drafting rules because he was selling his first picks in the draft.
And they moved to California.
Yeah, he wants to move to California to make more money there, but they've got to pay the mortgage. And KSE getting their, what is it, their £2 million consultancy fees.
£3 million,
excuse me. I mean, that's going to be, you know, one monthly mortgage payment for KSE in Los Angeles. That's one thing. So we'll end with him. Personally, I think the lack of FFP, it's saying we're pro-billionaires playthings, which sadly, global brands like our beloved football club is. We need the equivalent of Etihad Airlines, we need the equivalent of the Glazer family, and we've got that only 31.3% of the club in Alisha Usmanov. If he was our owner now, I think we'd have more money, whether he likes it or not.
I don't know whether we need to go as far as needing that kind of approach. Let's not forget it, Arsenal have got far superior financial resources to Atletico Madrid or to Borussia Dortmund or to others that do well. It would be tough, but the gap between Chelsea and Arsenal in wages is about 20 million. Our gap over Spurs is about 80 million. Our gap, you know, we've got this idea of poverty. We have a lot of financial resource, some of which isn't used very well and some of which is kept in the bank.
Well, it's the manager that fosters that view.
Manager and certain people that want to protect Arsenal. Yeah. We are in English football's elite. You want to try being Everton or Swansea and seeing what it's like to compete. So I don't want to get too much into this, oh, poor old Arsenal. If they awarded contracts smartly and spent the money that they've got, yes, it's tough, but they've got a damn good chance of being able to get past United, Chelsea and City.
Right, one word answer. If Arsene Wenger goes in 2017, will Arsenal win the title within the next decade? Yes or no?
Oh, God, yeah.
Right,
that's all a decade.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Within the next decade, Arsenal will win a title.
They will win a title before 2027.
With or without Arsene Wenger, maybe with him.
Ooh. David?
Without him, yes.
He wants to stay. He wants another contract.
No way. Okay. Right. We are recording at Ivory Corner for the last time, and we have a question from She Wore a Yellow Ribbon, which is quite apt. Which current player would win a pie-eating contest? Any offers?
Which colour?
I'd say Gazzola.
I would say Olivier Giroud, because if a pie was named Olivier Giroud, he would definitely eat himself, wouldn't he?
Good one. Any offers, David?
For me, Jack Wilshere. I think if his injuries persist, you'll see him at the age of 26 being the new Kevin Nolan at West Ham, built like a brick shit house through everything he eats and drinks.
Any thoughts, Steve?
Well, my only thought would be all the pies in here are named after players. You could possibly have the Santi Cazorla and have some what's the horse stuff they have in Spain? What's the thing they call it? The name escapes me. The Spanish meat.
Chorizo.
So the Santi Cazorla or chorizo pie.
Right, so he would eat that then.
It's MasterChef, and Steve's fucked everything up.
Anyway, we won't worry too much about that.
Maybe if it was August the 31st, Arsene Wenger could have some humble pie.
Good. Okay, so just time to plug the current issue of the Gooner, which will be on sale before the game on Saturday against Stoke. And it's so long since we went to press, I can hardly remember what's in it. But we do have a special feature on goalkeepers, including a tribute to John Lukic, which I remember. And there's an interview as well with Stuart Houston, the former assistant manager of George Graham, amongst many other articles. We will have a new issue out the following home game, which I think is Olympiacos, but not Manchester United. Anyway, one of those two. Thanks again to our hosts, Highbury Corner, your recommended pre- and post-match eating spot. We have thoroughly enjoyed their food and drink choices in the months we've been recording here. Hopefully not too much background noise tonight, although there was one noisy customer at one point, I do recall, and a couple of police sirens. You can contact us via Twitter at Gooner Podcast, and you can email us at goonerpodcast@gmail.com. So just time for a goodbye from the panel. David?
Good evening. Thanks for listening, guys.
Tim?
Good night.
And Steve?
Cheers, everyone.
Our next podcast will be in October. This is your host, Kevin Widger. Farewell, and thanks for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee. All good friends and jolly good company. Way!